Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English debt.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this October 19th, 2019. That's exciting. We managed to get, you know, it's almost 2020.
Hindsight?
I just think 2020 sounds like something out of a science fiction novel.
I think it sounds out of an ophthalmologist's handbook.
Could be. Well, anyway,
next year, we all have perfect vision.
Perfect hindsight.
Yes.
Hindsight.
We have 2020 hindsight, but right now, we're trying to see 2020 into the future.
So that'd be 2020 foresight.
Right.
Which means we're farsighted. It means we can't see what's in front of our face, which may be the truth. Anyway,
my optics are fine, myoptically.
Myoptically, yes, I think so. Anyway, this is The Personal Wealth Coach, and The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of the radio program, which you may have deduced from the fact that you may be listening to it on the radio.
A radio program?
Yes, okay. And which it also plays over the internet, and I think we may have more listeners on the internet than we do on the radio, so does it make it an internet program that plays over the radio?
I'm not sure how to quantify this. I think I'm going to need a government grant. Around $5 million should do it. We'll figure this out eventually.
Got it.
It's hard work.
$5 million is not
somebody's going to do it.
I think you should go for 20.
$20 million. That'll probably cover most of the costs.
In honor of the year 2020, you should go for $20,200,000.
Sounds great. That's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
It's logical.
Anyway,
I think it'll fly.
Which goes to say that not only is this a radio or internet program, but is also the name of a investment advisory firm. Fiduciaries we are, and it's a fiduciary firm, which means that we don't get commissions or sell stuff. We give what we believe to be unbiased advice, and the firm is regulated but not necessarily approved or disapproved, and the secretary would deny all knowledge of the by the Securities and Exchange, United States Securities and Exchange Commission. And we tell you this because that's the regulator you should complain to if you want to complain. And if you can figure out who to complain to at the SEC, go for it.
Yeah.
The information that we present on here is information. It is not investment advice, despite the fact...
Educational.
Despite the fact the Personal Wealth Coach is an investment advisory firm, because investment advice is given to individuals based on their individual goals and objectives.
Do you have to say it so lawyerly? Individuals, it's given to individuals based on individual needs.
It sounds very disclosingly cool and official if I say it very lawyerly.
If you
fashion.
Say a lot of individually stuff in there.
Yeah, it sounds like big words that nobody uses anywhere else. That's what lawyers do, right?
Yes. Individual lawyers tend to individually use individual words.
Yes, they do. And the information we present here has been obtained from sources we believe to be reliable and have been reliable in the past, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of the information.
Accuracy or completeness. Warranty or guarantee.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, you've got all that stuff. So, but the important piece to grab in here.
What's a warranty and a guarantee?
I don't know. You're the one that said it twice. That sounded redundant and repetitive. You see what I did with the redundant?
That was good. I like that. Yes.
Yes.
Redundantly so. Repetitive. Yeah, anyway, I've said all that stuff, so the lawyers then get happy, and we want to keep the lawyers happy.
Something important to take out of this is that we deem.
We deem.
Yeah. Deeming is not something most people do, but
well,
we have just admitted to deeming
it's
things.
Like feasance. I mean, feasance only appears when you're in trouble, but malfeasance is different from misfeasance, which is different from disfeasance, which is different from feasance.
Feasance should be just meaning that you did something, not necessarily good or bad. You just did something.
That's right.
It's up to some feasance over there.
But there should be a positive. There's malfeasance and disfeasance and misfeasance and... There should be some positive, like, good feasance. Like, they did that really, really well.
Hmm.
Or, to use the vernacular, he did that good.
Profeasance.
Oh, profeasance. Oh, we could create a new word.
He's up to some profeasance over there. Go give him an award.
Or confeasance. Oh, that sounds like confidence, doesn't it?
It does, kind of.
I wonder if they're related. Anyway, there was something else we needed to tell you, and that is that we do not, we are not paid to do this radio program, nor do we pay KTEM to do the radio program. However, we do advertise for the radio program on KTEM, and if you can understand that, you're way ahead of me why we need to disclose that, but we are required to disclose that by
our good friends. Wait a minute. I have to say this. It's going around everywhere. There is no quid pro quo, Senator.
I'm not a senator.
I wish. Wouldn't it be cool if the senators were asking us about quid pro quo on our radio program?
I like that. Quid pro quo.
That's another lawyerly term.
Matter of fact, when we first started doing the program back in 1846 or thereabouts, I made a point there would be no quid pro quo.
That was the whole idea.
Yeah. And I thought that was really cool because he's Latin.
Yeah. Will we have a caller on 773-1400 who has dared to brave the inanity of our conversation? We are all over the map, or I think we threw the map out and got GPS. We're all over the GPS. Caller on 773-1400, thank you for your bravery. You are on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I found your map in a bottle floating on the ocean.
Ooh, that makes sense.
You left out this pheasants and that pheasants everywhere a pheasants pheasants.
Yeah, well, all right, I'm taking notes here.
Hey, I got a question for you. What's with all the fear porn about the economy and the dollar? Well, we got to go buy gold now all of a sudden.
Who said that?
Well, there's a lot of it out there.
Well, there is. Anybody who wants you to buy gold wants you to buy it from them because they want to make a profit.
I know, sir. I know. But here's the thing. How long have we been off the gold standard?
A long time. Officially, we went off in 1971.
Yeah. And guess what? We're also living and breathing and spending that dollar, aren't we?
Yep.
And that dollar is the coin of the realm, right?
The coin of the realm or the coin of the realm?
Coin of the realm.
Yeah. Right. Yep,
okay.
You're right.
Yep.
And it works. The dollar works.
All the fear. Oh, go out and get yourself some gold in case the world goes to hell and the economy collapses. Doesn't the Fed control everything about the economy as far
no.
as the dollar goes?
Boy, they wish they did.
Well, they do control the supply of dollars.
Yes.
They sure
loosely,
do.
Loosely. Not very precisely.
I know what you're saying, but you know as well as I do, they do.
They do control the quality and the quantity of dollars, and they do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And nobody has control over them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Not us.
Well, they can be impeached by the Congress. And the board can be impeached.
Don't mean nothing. They can do what they want.
No, they can't. No,
they have to vote, and it's really, really carefully structured so that there's political appointees that had to be reviewed by the Senate. So the president appoints, the Senate observes, they consent, advise, and consent. And then there are heads of banks that are also on that voting board.
And they're elected by the bankers around the country who are members of the Federal Reserve.
So it's kind of like...
Yeah, well.
It's checks and balances. It's not perfect.
You got the fox's garden, the chicken.
No. It's in the banker's best. Now listen just a second. It's in the banker's best interest that the dollar remain sound and inflation not get out of hand.
It's also in the banker's best interest to make a lot of money. And this is why the political appointees are thrown in there. It's also in the political appointees' best interest to make a lot of money. But when they make money, usually the banks aren't making money.
So is that how, like, Nancy Pelosi got rich and me and you got poor?
I don't know how that... No. No. You could say that's how John Carter's net worth went up dramatically since he's been
really
in office.
Not that high, though.
But the point is, congresspersons really don't get all that wealthy anymore. They used to get pretty wealthy when they could keep their campaign contributions when they retired, but they don't get that wealthy anymore. And Nancy Pelosi really has no... wealth coming from the Federal Reserve.
Well, yeah, I know. But my point is that you and I can steam all we want about this and that. And, oh, we better go buy this. We better go get this gold and this silver over here. It's not going to make a difference one way or the other because we're still going to be on the dollar.
The price of gold is largely controlled by what goes on in Russia and India and China.
And anybody who wants to, anybody who says gold is stable or gold rises in value,
they haven't really been watching the prices of gold lately. It's
they may have
flying
watched
all
it,
over the place.
But this is an interesting thing, and this is the point I tell people who say, "Why am I seeing the question you originally asked? Why am I seeing all these advertisements for gold?" If somebody
he didn't say advertisements, he said fear point, which is what it is.
Yeah, that's right. But the advertisements for
accurate.
Gold. Remember, people are paying literally millions of dollars to convince you to buy something, which means they are willing to pay millions of dollars trying to sell it, which means that's probably the thing that should be done.
You know, that's a good, very good explanation.
And if somebody's willing to pay millions of dollars to unload their gold on you, that means buying it is probably a very bad idea. When you see the advertisements for gold totally disappear,
but you see,
then there's a possibility that gold may be something worth buying.
But you hear all these voices on the radio always telling you, oh, you better go get you some gold.
Well, you only hear that on Fox.
Yeah, right.
Seriously.
Well, I said on the radio.
Well, there's other radio networks besides Fox.
Yeah. So, anyway, guys, I just wanted to point that out because they got everybody up and up for what, you know, next year, you know, what's going to happen? Well, I can tell you what's going to happen. The Fed is going to structure everything so that the economy looks bad, so Trump looks bad, and all the Democrats are going to come in and have to fix it.
I completely disagree with you. We're going to talk about that.
We can talk about it in more detail.
But that's what I'm going to predict.
All right. That's your prediction.
You guys have a great day.
Thank you very much for calling.
And party on there, Clan McCure.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a good subject to talk about at some point today. The fact that I was reading all the various speeches by the various members of the Fed, the voting members of the Fed, and they're almost universally saying positive things about the economy. But they're also saying that they're opening to lowering rates.
Yeah.
They're ready to lower
rates.
Doing
their job is what they're
doing. Their job of talking up the economy and saying things are fine and getting better and we're on solid footing. That must be these are our talking points. Solid footing in the economy.
Yes.
Everything's going to be all right. Don't worry about it.
A solid footing works really well for race car drivers. It's not really great for hiking. Got solid feet. They need to be a little flexible.
Well, I like the solid footing, though. That's the thing you put your foot on. Anyway,
okay.
We have another caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi, it's a question about personal finance.
Okay.
Here.
And what is the financial advantage to me to set up a charitable trust? Second question. How do I talk with my daughter, my son-in-law, and my grandson about finances? They think I'm an idiot. I used to think about my father the same way, but the older I get, the smarter my father gets now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got a father-son team here.
I'm going to hang up, and I'm going to let you enjoy your voices.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. First question first.
Charitable trust.
Yeah. What is the financial benefit to him to setting up a charitable trust? Well, first off, I'm going to break the mold a minute. Let's step back a second.
Wait a minute. You're going to break the mold a minute and then step back a second?
Yeah. Well, before we break the mold, it's going to take 60 seconds. So we had the first one. We're going to step back.
Okay. Step back for a second.
Okay.
Time's up.
All right. Here's what's going on here. What is the financial benefit to you to give to a charity? Nothing.
Oh, yeah.
No, there's no benefit to you financially to give to a charity. You might get a tax benefit.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's, you have to spend a dollar to save if you're in the highest tax bracket and you include the Affordable Care Act surcharge, now being called the Medicare surcharge. You're up in the 40% bracket. So you saved 40 cents by spending a dollar.
Yeah.
So what you have to take your mind out of for a second, wrench it out of there. If you're going to be giving to charity, it is not because it's going to make you money. So that's the first thing to say. Charity is not for profit. That's kind of its definition. if you want to give to charity and you're dedicated to doing it, there's no reason why you should pay taxes on the money that you're paying to charity so long as you fall into certain categories. If your income's high enough and you have enough other deductions, then you can start taking charitable deductions. Well, what if you want to make this a big part of what you're doing and you just want to make a big push toward it now? And then direct that money towards charity into the future so you don't constantly have to be looking at your own tax positions to make that work. Well, that's a charitable trust. You can call it a directed charitable trust. There's foundations that are set up this way. There are lots of different ways of organizing an investment portfolio for the use of charity. Endowments at universities do it.
The big deal is if you have a year when your tax bracket is going to shoot into the stratosphere for some reason,
yeah,
and you have a lot of excess money and you're going to give to a charity anyway,
do you want to make
charitable contributions, but you really don't even know which ones you want to make. If you set up a charitable trust, you can give all the money this year.
Yeah, and this is the big point. Let me give an example. Say you own a small hotel chain or a warehouse facility, any business, or a ranch.
Is that a chain of small hotels?
It's only for chains to stay at.
Okay.
So if you ever wondered where chains sleep,
that's, I always wondered.
Hotel chains.
Small hotel chains.
Yeah, small hotel chains. So this concept, you made a lot of money in 1 year. You sold a business, a ranch, whatever it was. You are now in the absolute highest tax bracket. You want to use a big chunk of this money for charity into the future, but you believe that if you turn and give $5 million to your favorite charity right now, that might completely change the way the charity acts. They may become a completely different entity. And that happens with small charities and big money. They become very different from what they started to be. So you want to have some control over that. Most people do. If they want to give to a charity, it's because they like the charity. They don't want to give the total control of that to the charity because they're afraid the charity might do something wrong with it. So you get this big money coming in. You set up the foundation that year and you take the deduction that year in the year with a high bracket. And that's the idea. It's generally, any way you look at it, it is not a net benefit to you to give to charity.
It may not be
financially.
It's not a financial
emotionally
benefit.
It might be.
And it might be. The other thing is, if you have a charitable trust of any significant size and you're giving out money each year to various charities,
right,
and you want to attend all their banquets and have them be really nice to you,
then you want to do it in a way that's feeding them over time.
if you feed them a little bit of money
or
each year.
Let's flip it to another way. If you want to have some help in the decision-making process of where that charity's going in the future, having a big attachment to the purse string is a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I don't want people to think that somehow I misconstrue what I'm saying is that I'm somehow anti-charity. I'm not. What I am saying is that tax benefit on the charitable contribution, it's nice to have, but that's not why you're giving to the charity. You give to the charity for completely different reasons. Whatever your reasons are, I have them, he has them. That's why you do it. He being you. You, that was
you
the royal he, you.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Not oh,
the
you.
The issue in a charitable trust really boils down to giving the money to a charitable contribution, getting the tax benefit, but retaining control over the money as it goes out to the various charitable or whatever charitable organization you're
there. There are some complexities here that need to be looked at. And let me just kind of lightly gloss over them enough to let people know that it's important, particularly if you're talking about a larger amount of money. Most of these enterprises, the IRS prefers if the control is no longer with you. Trustees. You can still do it, but you get a little bit more scrutiny. Be careful who you hand the controls to. Be careful how the rules are set on how those people get elected or appointed by the next set.
And above all, be very careful, unless you are the president, that you don't set it up so that the money comes back to you.
Yes. Yeah, because, well, the president, that's what closed his charities in New York. There's really not been a lot of news about this, but the Trump Foundation was shut down in New York because he was using it, and they were using it for their own benefit. It's very clear.
Yeah, but they did it for quite a number of years and got away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and they did some good charity in the middle of it. It was just half and half. They were buying paintings for themselves and so on out of it. That's you know, I don't want to get politics into this. It's a very famous case in charity right now, though.
Right. And we have another caller on 773-14. Did he have a second question? Yeah, talk to his children.
Yes.
But we have another caller.
Yeah, we'll hit that point in just a moment. And caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was going to just ask you a question here concerning money. What was the reason being that on the money they have this written down, this notice, legal tender for all debt, public and private? Is that something that they put on there so there's any kind of illegal transactions that you make with money? It's already put down on that note that you can do whatever you want with it. Your money and nobody's going to say nothing. Thank you.
All right.
Well, let's get to the we hear your question.
Yes. The question is, why is it that it says this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private? We'll address it in just a minute. We've got one more question to answer first.
How to talk to your children.
And grandchildren.
And grandchildren. You want to know the most effective way, saying you're not getting any inheritance from me, and bingo, you got their attention. But it's really hard. Once a person has reached a certain age and they have not experienced financial hardship, to convince them that they need to pay attention to their future and investing for their future because they've never had to, they've never witnessed you going through financial crises, it is an extremely, you can talk to them about it and you can sit down and reason with them. But it's crucial. This is my opinion. It's crucial to listen to them, too, and hear why they are not interested in working with money.
Okay. So I'm going to approach this a different way. We've got education in this. But one way to gauge how good the education is by looking at the kids of the people with the education. If we're preaching it, what does it mean? Where is it from? You've got 5 kids. One of them is sitting across the desk with you. Obviously, I listened when you were talking about finance.
You did.
Do you have kids that didn't?
Yes.
So that's something to hold as well. It doesn't matter how great you are with finance or even communicating about finance on a public stage. There are some times that the younger generation will only realize how smart you are when it's too late. This is what all this is about.
Called Generations, The History of America's Future, 1584 to 2069, that talks extensively about this. If neither a person nor the person who raised them went through a period of extreme financial hardship, the odds are they will not save or invest money. Now, in some cases, there's exceptions to that, but there is a tendency for them never having experienced or never having experienced the wisdom of somebody who expresses their pain at being broke. The fact that they have never experienced it, either first or second hand, means that they are probably not going to be too worried about it. It's like most people don't worry too much in Texas about an earthquake.
Right.
That
doesn't mean earthquakes don't happen or that they're not bad when they do. It's just not something that's a really big worry for most Texans.
We haven't experienced an earthquake since the late 1800s.
Little ones.
I mean, or serious earthquakes.
Yeah.
And as a result, we're not worried about earthquakes. People who live on the coast, and I have just been down there and talking to people, are not worried. This is astonishing to me. They're not worried about a Category 5 hurricane coming ashore and destroying the home that they've just built. They just, frankly, most of them are not worried about it. Because they said none have ever hit here.
Pompeii, Herculaneum, the most high-class, high-value property in the Roman Empire, placed at the foot of a live volcano. Who would do that?
People who said that volcano hasn't exploded in our lifetime or our parents' lifetime or our grandparents' lifetime, therefore it's safe.
And before you ask that question with shock and how could they possibly do that, do a little bit of internet search on live volcanoes in the United States that have people building on them. Just give it a shot.
Yeah.
We're still doing it. Human nature hasn't changed. We tend to be afraid of the things that we have experienced, even if the bigger things to be afraid of are bigger.
And we got another caller, but let me give you one more thing. That's why wealthy people commonly set up trusts to benefit their offspring and multiple generations.
They don't trust their kids.
Because the younger generation simply will not get involved in it.
Now, part of what I do, and we've got a caller waiting, and we have another question after that. Part of what I do regularly is talk to kids of high net worth people and work with them so that they can understand the value of money. If they've never had to earn it, they've never had any kind of hardship, it's really hard for them to understand the difference between 20 cents and $20 or $200. They're roughly the same concept in a lot of these people's mind. 20 cents and $200 are about the same.
Yeah, I understand that.
Because our brains are really good at looking at percentages and really bad at looking at finite things. If you see half of your stuff at risk, it's very different than a small amount of it at risk, even if it's the same number at the end. And that's a very different subject. We've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the show. I know you still backed up on a couple of questions. Sometime this morning, can you explain something if possible? I know there's been a lot of press about trade with China and this and that. The way I understand it, trade with Canada and Mexico dwarf that. And there's a new deal working its way through Congress. It's, I guess, a counter to NAFTA. When you guys get a chance, can you explain this YMCA or whatever it's called?
YMCA.
The USMCA.
USMCA, which was named by President Trump.
But the song that goes with YMCA might go with this one, and I can imagine village people singing.
That was YMCA. I got that. That's cool.
But can you explain the differences of the two, MCA versus NAFTA, and if this one gets passed, is it going to be better for the U.S.? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Man, we got a lot of good calls this hour.
I think the question in line now is all debts.
Public and private.
Legal tender.
Legal tender. Yes, legal
tender.
Which means that you can burn it. Wait a minute. No, that's not. Tender just means it's passable, holdable.
It's not T-I-N-D-E-R. It's T-E-N-D-E-R.
It means it transports value. Okay, what that means is that this is important, very important. We have had lots of different kinds of dollars in the history of the United States. We've had dollars that were issued by local banks. We've had dollars that were issued by major banks. We've had multiple currencies, all called dollars at the same time, with different exchange rates inside the United States. As we moved slowly through the process of going from 13 countries to one country and then adding countries to it over time, that's what our states are. Our states are countries that have been added. And we kind of give a pass to that because they're a subset of our existing. But the reality is that we were a lot like the European Union for a long time. And it took them having a big act saying, hey, we're going to use one currency. Only not everybody in the European Union accepted that. So they've got multiple currencies in the European Union. I mean, sometime right around right now, there's a vote going on Brexit, so I'm wondering what's happening on that side.
And that is a good area. You realize they have two currencies.
Exactly. There's the pound and the euro.
No.
Oh, and then there's
two currencies inside.
The Scottish pound,
the
Irish pound, the Welsh pound, and the English pound. There's more than two.
And there are places in England, for example, who do not accept Scottish pounds. A banknote that says £1 sterling, but is issued by the Bank of Scotland. They don't accept it.
Right. So why it says that on the dollar, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. It means that if you're a bank and you're trying to do business in the United States, you have to take this as money. There was times when some money was taken and some money wasn't. The Specie Circular in 1837 or 1836, Andrew Jackson passed that, that basically said that the federal-backed banks would not accept debt payments if they weren't written on a document that said they were backed by silver or gold.
And the federal government would not accept them for tax payments.
Right. So you wouldn't accept for tax payments, and the banks that were federally backed, which were considered the pet banks at the time, which were usually the same banks that issued the money that they wouldn't accept later after the Specie Circular. So it's important to have something like that written there saying, hey, this is real money. And you can't say just because it was printed in the printing press in St. Louis rather than the one in Denver that that this isn't real money. So that's what it is. And that was a long-winded answer, but hopefully an understandable one. The last one is USMCA. It's percolating through Congress. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I read NAFTA, and I read the USMCA, United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, rather than the North American Free Trade Agreement. They're not that different from each other. They are very similar to each other. In the automobile manufacturing area, more parts need to be made in places that charge higher hourly wages, which generally implies the United States. A higher percentage of parts in a final product must be made in the three nations, either Canada, Mexico, or the United States, to be considered a USMCA product. It's up to 55% now instead of 50%. So 55% of the product actually has to be made here in order for it to qualify for the USMCA stuff. It's a slight improvement, 5% there. It went from NAFTA, the worst deal in recorded history, to the best deal in recorded history with that and one other minor change. The other minor change is that if there is a dispute about trade, it's dealt with in the country of the dispute. I have a feeling, I believe that that's a step backwards, because there was a tribunal before, three countries, three judges. The head judge was an American judge, always, in the NAFTA cases. And now we're going to a place where if you have a dispute in Mexico, you got to go to Mexican courts. That could be a problem. It's going through Congress, even though it's already been signed by the President of Mexico and the United States and the Prime Minister of Canada. So the heads of state have already signed the deal.
It's really not,
but it has to be
change.
Approved by Congress. It really isn't a big change.
Well, the biggest single change is the title.
Yeah, that's really it. And whose stamp of approval it has.
It starts with U.S.
Yeah, it starts with U.S. It's America first, and Trump is the guy that organized this version of it. So,
it really amounts to the changes are extremely minor.
Yeah, from my perspective and from the perspective of most people trade-driven, this is not a change at all. There's nothing really different. It's the same thing with a different name and some minor tweaks. And we've made larger tweaks to NAFTA.
Yes.
While NAFTA was in existence without any fanfare at all, lots of times, almost annually. And now you come forward, we've got a completely new deal. It's got to go through Congress again. It has to go through the legislative branches of both Canada and Mexico. To be approved again. And if it doesn't get approved, the old one gets canceled by the president. That's the threat. And we have another caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well,
not on the
scared
air.
Scared him off, or her off.
All yeah, right. We haven't even covered the market yet. What's happened this week?
Did something happen in the market?
That's a good question.
Actually,
do you have a hot spot over there?
Yes, I do.
Good.
The week was full of bad economic news. Very little or no good economic news, but the S&P 500 rose 0.54% for the week, which we're going to get into in more detail, but we have a caller.
Before we hit the caller, we have breaking news.
What's that?
The UK Parliament defers vote, likely forcing Brexit delay.
Okay, well,
There you go.
That's important.
And now we have a caller on 773-1400. Go ahead. You're on the Personal Wealth Coach.
Caller?
Hello?
Oh, scared him again.
You know, I think it's the sound of our voices.
I know. I am afraid of a siren.
You used to say something within the sound of our voice. What
yes.
was that?
Anywhere else within the sound of our voices?
Oh, okay. Well, obviously the sound of our voices is frightening or something.
I am scared.
The S&P 500 bobbed around. It reflexively jerked upward at the idea that we had a good deal with China last week. And then it started downward Friday. And it continued downward. And it's kind of bounced back and forth. The idea that Brexit... we might have a smooth Brexit going on over in Europe, bobbed it up a little bit, but it is sagged. The reason it's not up any more than 0.54% is because it's gradually become apparent that the agreement with China is, what's it called, a nothing burger?
A nothing burger, yeah.
Because
status quo.
There's no change, basically.
The only change is that we didn't add a tariff that we said we were going to. If things hadn't changed,
yeah. So we did on October. October 15th, we didn't increase the 25% tariffs to 30. And the news has come out that the reason we didn't do it is because the economic advisors and political advisors of the president said that would hurt his chances of reelection. At least that's what's reported from the White House. But as far as an agreement with China, they said, yeah, we're going to buy a whole bunch of. Agricultural goods from the United States, but they didn't specify when over what period of time, 30 to 50 billion dollars. But
it's phase one is supposed to be 30 to 50 billion dollars, and the time frame is supposed to be 18 months, but it doesn't have a start date.
That's what I'm saying. We don't know when it's going to happen, and the language is such that they're not obligated to do it. It says we're going to try to, we're going to think
yes.
about it.
Yes.
So it really. None of the sticking points that have derailed the negotiations in the past were actually overcome.
Yes. One thing was.
What?
In writing, the Chinese have said that they're going to work on the intellectual property deal.
They're going to work on it.
It's aspirational, but it's in writing. That's a big deal.
Okay, rather than just verbally.
Up till now, they've been like, yeah, we'll do that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're saying, we'll do that at some point, but it's in ink.
Well, our demand was to put it into law in China.
Yeah, and that's
and they
impossible.
Still said no.
Yeah, here and let me. When I just said it's impossible, people are stealing intellectual property. This phase one also stops the coercion of intellectual property from businesses that are partnered with a Chinese business. They're
Does it
not
really
allowed.
Stop it.
It's aspirational because it doesn't go into any regulatory aspect of what's to be done if it's tried or what. There's no. Meat
basically,
underneath it.
We acknowledge it's a good idea to probably stop this.
Right.
It's probably a good idea to stop this.
And it's part of the negotiation process. But usually when we see a trade agreement going through, we see a lot more detail on the meat of it so that we can make a decision. And this is what the UK Parliament's just said, is that Prime Minister Johnson was over in Europe and made a deal that was invisible all the way up to about 2 days ago. From the Parliament's perspective, Parliament hasn't had the chance to, they've had 2 days to look at the thing. And that's generally not a good time period to vote on something this big. So they've said, hey, let's delay it. Let's delay the vote. If the deal's a good deal, they'll vote for it. If it's not, they still might vote for it.
Which probably means
if it's
that
a good deal, they might not vote for it. I don't know.
The date of Brexit will probably be extended past Halloween.
Yes. Hopefully.
Well, presuming that they do it that way,
it
is. And why is Brexit a big deal to us? Well, I'm gonna tell you, we do a lot of trade with the United Kingdom, and we have trade agreements. But the trade agreements are with the European Union, not with the United Kingdom, because as long as Great Britain is part of the EU, the European Union,
not just Great Britain, but the whole UK,
the UK is part of the European Union. They can't make separate trade deals. They're trying to work out some things in advance, but the president has said he's not going to do it in the United States, so it isn't going to happen. And if they suddenly were to be yanked out of the European Union or jump out of the European Union on October 31st with no agreement on how they were going to handle customs, It would be extremely awkward for a whole lot of different reasons, not the least of which is we no longer have any trade agreements with the United Kingdom at that point, which means our trade with the United Kingdom would drop off dramatically. And we do export to the United Kingdom, and they do export to us. So anybody in the any manufacturer or something in the United States that uses something that's made in the United Kingdom suddenly couldn't get it anymore. And anybody in the United Kingdom who was used to buying things from the United States couldn't buy them anymore. And that is a big, that could have a minor but measurable effect on the United States economy.
And now I'm going to give a geography lesson, because I've heard so many people say this, and I say it incorrectly regularly. You just said Great Britain when referring to the UK. I'm just going to throw this out there. The islands of Britain are called the British Isles. So the Orkneys, Ireland, and the largest of those isles is Great Britain.
Just kind of like Scotland, and Wales.
And yeah, England, Scotland, Wales is Great Britain. So one island. It's kind of like Hawaii. You say, where'd you go? I went to Hawaii. Well, where in Hawaii? Hawaii. Well, that's the Big Island. That's Great Britain. It's the same kind of concept. And hopefully that helps people at home, too, because this is not something I learned in geography. The United Kingdom is everything.
Includes Northern Ireland and Wales and Scotland.
Right, and some other places on the planet.
The Faroes and...
Yes.
And lots of other interesting places. It is important that there be a smooth transition for them and to a lesser degree for us. But it is more an indicator.
Gibraltar.
Right. It is more of an indicator. In other words, a disorderly disintegration of the European Union. European Union is probably our third or fourth biggest trading partner.
Yeah.
And as a result...
when measured as one unit. Yeah.
Right. And effectively, we treat it for trade purposes as a single entity. And if Brexit were to occur in a disorderly and chaotic fashion, it would put a great deal of strain on the rest of the economic effect in the European Union.
We would have to come up with a trade deal with the United Kingdom in a very short period of time. We're going to have to do that anyway.
And it would have to be approved by the Senate.
If it's a treaty.
Right.
And that's the thing, is that an agreement has to be approved by the House and the Senate, but it's a majority. If we have a trade deal, a real trade agreement, that's called a treaty. And that takes a supermajority in the Senate. It's not a little thing. It's at the same level as the Constitution. So that'd be nice to have a Constitution-level trade agreement out there. We don't have any right now.
And it's one of several things that are going on simultaneously in the United States, between the United States and the rest of the world. And if any one of them fails, it could create a cascade of failure in other areas. And we have another caller on 773-1400, but we better do commercials after this call.
Yes, all right. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, yes, sir. How come we never hear anything about the effect of the illegal immigration on our economy? Nobody ever talks about that.
Oh, we have. Yeah, we have. There are some really, really good in-depth analyses of how money gets spent there, how much money's being leached out of the system in entitlements, and how much money's coming back into the system, get this, in entitlements.
We'll answer that here. The easiest way to see this, it's being tracked in lots and lots of places, but you can see immediately outcomes of the study that's going on. Go to the Social Security Administration, and every year they have an estimate on the trust fund. The first page of the estimate says that this is going to last longer than we expected because we're receiving multiple sets of incomes per Social Security number, and that's illegal immigration.
In other words, people who take up somebody else's Social Security number and pay their Social Security taxes but never have any right to take it out.
They also
are making our Social Security fund more healthy.
They're also taking money out of the system in entitlements. And we've got to play some commercials. We'll get back to this on the other side. There's callers trying to get in here. We got to play the commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.